Continental Media 0703 is on the air, recorded July 29th. Glenn Hauser here with our more or less monthly supplement to World of Radio. Continental Media is made possible by Universal Radio. For quality amateur and shortwave equipment, consult their website, www.universal-radio.com, or for a catalog, call 1-800-431-3939. Universal also sponsors www.dxing.com, where you'll find much useful information about listening to the radio as a hobby. Most of us have heard WWBH, the U.S. government time signal station in Hawaii, at least heard it underneath WWV in Colorado. But have we seen it? Well, I got close to it on my one visit to Kauai, but I've recently come across a webpage with some excellent photographs of the facility. However, it's actually off-limits currently, so even if you manage to get to the location, you might not be able to get in to see it. Check out this website, www.well.com/user/dmsml/wwvh/index.html. Number of photos taken in January of 2005, and at the bottom you'll find a link to many other photos of radio facilities, not only in Hawaii but elsewhere. This is from the broadcast engineering services of someone called Bonnie Doon. Around Memorial Day, I was on a de-expedition at Meadow Lake Park in Enid, tuning around on medium wave around sunset, and was pleased to hear a station actually signing off with a formal announcement and some music. A lot of daytimers just pull the plug, but here's one which actually takes the trouble to give us a nice announcement. I didn't get it on tape, but you may be able to hear it. In May, the sign-off time was 0115 UT. Of course, that changes every month. According to a schedule, which the FCC calculates for each station, AM station that is, where these things matter, it's KJIM 1500 in Sherman, Texas, not too far from here. They said they would be back at 6 a.m., and we're playing best songs and memories of the radio. They also played Thanks for the Memories, but not the Bob Hope version. In fact, they played it all the way through, so they were not really off the air until 0117 UT, when they said Night All. That's KJM in Sherman, Texas. Fewer and fewer medium wave stations, it seems, will QSL or even have a QSL card. But here's a TIS station, which has a very nice card. It's the one on 1700 in Arlington, Virginia. Call sign is WQCR563. Brett Saylor in Pennsylvania reports getting his card in the IRCA list. It's from the Office of Emergency Management in Arlington County, Virginia. An 8.5 by 11 inch full-color QSL card, although it took 3 months. He sent a self-addressed label and $2 for return postage and handling. It was signed by, what do you know, an amateur who knows what QSLing means, WA3GIN, David Jordan. It had a photo of firefighters placing the station's helical antenna on a mast. It's a 10-watt station on 1700 in Arlington, Virginia. And Chuck Taylor in North Carolina has also heard and QSL'd it. It does get out. One of the programs I usually listen to every week is No Strings Attached on KCSC, Edmond, Oklahoma City, Saturday mornings at 10 Central Time. One morning in July, I was surprised to hear one of the marches they were playing. It's, of course, a show about band music, identified as Voice of America. That's the name of the march, composed by Carl L. King. So I did some research online and found that Carl L. King, both names spelled with a K, composed 188 marches. One website gave a list of all of them, including Voice of America. Some of them have dedications, but not this one, so we're not positive that it refers to the International Broadcasting Service of the USA. After all, the phrase Voice of America is sometimes applied to other things. It seems that Carl L. King mainly wrote march music for the circus. And this one came out in 1955 or 56. I've tried to find out from VOA sources if it's definitely about the Voice of America, but we're still not sure. I eventually found a one-minute sample of it, and it's probably only 2 or 3 minutes long, at Amazon.com. You can probably find it, too, if you search on a recording called Circus Spectacular by Carl L. King. Well, if the Washington Post can have its very own march, why not the Voice of America? It's a shame, though, that since there is a VOA march, we don't hear it played on the Voice of America. It could even be time to retire Yankee Doodle, although I'm afraid this march is not very distinctive. CommanderElliott.com spotted an article in the Liberian publication The Analyst on June 12th. New American presence at old VOA relay station in Liberia. The U.S. company DynCorp, D-Y-N-C-O-R-P, won a bid for the feeding of 500 Armed Forces of Liberia soldiers currently undergoing training at the Voice of America facilities in Carisbrook outside Monrovia. That was actually posted at allafrica.com, an excellent source for news about Africa. But, I say, does the VOA actually have anything at all to do with this facility now? DynCorp, it so happens, is also the civilian defense contractor operating Vance Air Force Base here in Enid. And reading the story in its entirety, it's actually about DynCorp's legal problems in Liberia. The analyst followed up with another story on July 9th, also via Commander Elliott. Given that VOA has not broadcast from there in 17 years, it will no longer be called the VOA relay site. It was destroyed in 1990 during the Civil War, and now Armed Forces of Liberia Training Center. It will be named for an unidentified old Liberian soldier. Kim also keeps track of what's happening with other disused VOA sites, notably what was once referred to as Bethany, Ohio. The Dayton Journal News of June 16th said more than 3,000 were expected to lay out their blankets and unfold their lawn chairs to enjoy the Lakeside Symphony Orchestra performance at what is now the Butler County Metro Park's Ronald Reagan Voice of Freedom Park at 7850 VOA Park Drive, where canoe and pedal boat rentals are offered. It's adjacent to Westchester Township's Voice of America Park. Pending National Park Service approval, the two parks will return under the VOA name when 258 acres of VOA is transferred to Metro Parks ownership later this year. It's hoped that the VOA concert at the lake will become an annual staple. That's not all going on at that site. Another story from the Oxford, Ohio Press of June 14th mentioned that there would be a dog fest that weekend at the VOA park, attracting 8,000 dogs and 15,000 people. Mike Glass has tracked down a mystery broadcaster in Indianapolis and reported July 9th to the WTFDA list. For anyone that was curious, like me, I searched the east side of Indianapolis to find this mystery broadcaster of nature sounds on 100.1 megahertz. It's at the Wellington Green Apartments Clubhouse, 1841 North Wellington. If you know Indy, it's inside a rectangle bordered by 16th and 21st Streets, Franklin Road, and I-465. He says the building was locked, so I could not go in to find out what was going on. More investigation to follow. This could be the ultimate FMDX for anyone outside the area. It only has a 2-mile radius on a car radio. It was something to do on a Sunday afternoon before the sporadic E came in. Maybe I have too much time on my hands. There was a rather embarrassing snafu in the Chicago area. On June 26th, William T. Hassig in Illinois says WCPT AM 850 suddenly started carrying the program of WGN AM 720 for over 10 minutes after some emergency tones. He says, I thought it was just more of the usual technical snafus that plague WCPT, our only left-leaning talk station. The problem cleared before I could get to the radio. And then the next morning, in Robert Feeder's column in the Sun-Times, he explained that somebody at the Federal Emergency Management Agency activated the emergency alert system, causing every station in northeast Illinois, except WGN itself, to carry WGN, which had its normal program. WGN is the primary carrier for northeastern Illinois. FEMA failed to tell Illinois Emergency Management Agency officials about the tests. Eric Loy of WDWS Radio in Champaign also tells us about this EIS blunder. The mistake resulted in a lot of confusion, as our station, WDWS 1400, ended up getting relayed on a local low-power TV station on Channel 39 for a while. Evidently, Spike Odell on WGN Chicago found himself being relayed all across the city. And the next day, a message came out from the officials about the EAS test. It's from the Illinois EMA. A faulty EAS message sent out to broadcast stations was part of a federal government test of a new satellite system being installed. There was no federal emergency at the time to trigger the message. The federal government conducted a test of the new system, but rather than being an internal test, the message was sent out to broadcast stations. We don't know why the federal government used a hot or active code rather than a test code when they sent out the message. There was also a long story about it, June 27th, in the Chicago Tribune via Curtis Sadowski, WTFDA. It says, in the parlance of the Cold War era that spawned the federally mandated emergency alert system, launch codes were issued throughout Illinois on Tuesday morning, automatically preempting dozens of radio and TV stations as if the region faced nuclear annihilation. Rather than President Bush reassuring citizens after an atomic blast or some other calamity, the audience of many Chicago outlets was treated to the sound of dead air, followed by the voice of WGN morning man Spike Odell, struggling to figure out what had happened. Something else that wasn't quite right, although not as serious, Doug Smith reported on in his TV news column of the July VHF UHF Digest. A frequency mystery in South Dakota. Pat Dyer in Texas and Randy Zur in Florida have noted the audio channel of KDLO Channel 3 on 65.79 megahertz, not on 65.74 where it should be. Video, however, is on the correct frequency, 61.24. The signal on 65.79 is not a spur. It's only on that frequency. FCC requires that a TV station's audio carrier be within 1 kilohertz of precisely 4.5 megahertz above the video carrier. This would exceed the regulation by a factor of 50, and it could cause severe audio distortion in TV sets tuned to KDLO. It's twice the normal peak deviation of a TV sound signal. It's like an FM station being 150 kilohertz off frequency. Both Pat and Randy noted the error across several sporadic openings. He says, I'm amazed KDLO has remained this far off frequency for this long. But the problem was finally corrected on June 28th because George McClintock read about this in DX Listing Digest and happened to know somebody at KDLO and contacted them. They appreciated hearing about the problem. The automatic frequency control on the unit had failed, perhaps due to extreme temperature variations. For local viewers, the KDLO audio probably came through better on old TV sets with wideband tuners or manual fine-tuning. But to get the sound in just right, the video would be off-tuned into the black. New TV sets are more narrowband with no fine-tuning but automatic frequency control on the assumption that all video and audio are transmitted exactly 4,500 kilohertz apart. Pat Dyer was actually a bit disappointed that we got this fixed because it was easy to identify the station, being the only one on that audio frequency with his Yaesu FT-847. By the way, the other Channel 3 station in South Dakota, KOTA in Rapid City, is already operating its DTV on Channel 2, and being on the lowest channel, it is being DX'd by a few lucky TV DXers. And it seems that when all the smoke clears in February of 09, when there are no more analog TV stations in the U.S., there won't be very many DTV stations on the lower channels. Doug Smith, in fact, has put together a list of what is expected to be the final lineup of DTV assignments by channel at his website, which is essential for referring to where every TV station in the continent can be found, www.w9wi.com. William Hepburn points out that there are expected to be only four U.S. stations on Channel 4 in North Pole, Alaska, Rock Island, Illinois, Danville, Kentucky, and Oak Hill, West Virginia. Danny Oglethorpe wonders, why are there so few DTVs going to be on Channel 4? Doug Smith suggests it might be to avoid interfering with VCRs, which of course use Channel 4 or Channel 3 as their output. There was a big problem with WBBM in Chicago, DTV on Channel 3 interfering with VCRs. In VHF UHF Digest, Mike Bugay in Connecticut says, what we find is that low-band VHF will be almost completely open. There will be only about 40 digital stations using channels 2 through 6. There could be one or two corrections as we approach 0 hour, but the list is very accurate. I took a look at it myself, and from my standpoint in Enid, Oklahoma, I see that there will not be a single low-band DTV station in Oklahoma, also none in Missouri, and only one in the entire state of Texas, way off in Fredericksburg on Channel 5. There will be one in Kansas, in Dodge City on Channel 6, the same channel they're on now. So I'm beginning to salivate over the prospect of unimpeded analog TVDX from Canada, Mexico, and beyond, where there may still be such stations for a while longer. Something might screw up this vision, such as new two-way interference occupying that part of the spectrum, but let us hope not right away. Someone said on the WTFDA list, Canada has an unofficial deadline of August 31st, 2011 for all analogs to shut down, except in remote areas, and switch to DTV or go dark. So we'll have three skip seasons, 2009, 10, and 11, with wide-open Canadian analog sporadic E. Then starting in 2012, it's a brave new world. And don't forget, the new solar cycle will be upon us by then. F2 skip on Channel 2 will really stand out on an empty channel. You're listening to Continent of Media 0703. Glenn Hauser here from P.O. Box 1684, Enid, Oklahoma 73702 USA, or WORADIO at yahoo.com. Posted on the IRCA list, here's Craig Healy's monthly rant about so-called IBOC or HD radio. Apple has released the long-awaited iPhone, touted as the best iPod ever. Projected sales are 7 million for the remainder of 2007, 15 million in 2008. It has significant internet connectivity ability, and there are rumors that Cisco's working on a way to connect it to corporate networks. That will filter down to better personal connection abilities as well. If we add another 15 million to the iPhone sales for 2009, assuming version 2 of the device is as popular, then 37 of them will be out there by the end of that year. Compare 37 million units to the 2 million IBOC radios Ubiquiti set as a goal for 2010. Far more people will be able to get streaming audio than HD radio. Yet Ubiquiti and its supporters refuse to even consider this. Streaming audio is the way to get digital audio to the listener. Cell phone coverage currently is exceptional. It no doubt exceeds by a significant amount the projected IBOC coverage, even if it's on every station. I will ignore the interference and weak IBOC signals, which significantly detract from HD radio coverage. Even IBOC's best-case scenario is worse than the reach of streaming. Streaming has unlimited channels and better data rates. Other than the monopolistic power and money grab of Sound Exchange and their members, there's nothing in the way of streaming audio. Private streams of your own content are easy to set up and beyond the reach of any rights fees. HD radio is obsolete right out of the box. It's silly to drive full speed down a dead-end street. However, Tim Kreidel replies, good points, but I disagree that the iPhone is a viable choice for streaming. It uses Edge, which is pokey to the point that it doesn't support a good streaming experience, based on my tests. A somewhat different take on this was posted at audiographics.com via Kevin Redding, ABDX. Internet radio stations will be showing up as rebroadcasts on HD radio side channels. WXY already is signed to do this. Soma.fm is leasing one of its sub-channels as additional programming for NPR. It was stupid of me not to see this coming, or that two industries could be so well suited to help each other out of problems. Internet radio stations are what's going to save HD radio. There's a dire need for good HD radio programming, and an uplift in its cool factor. Millions of people are turning to independent internet radio stations, and many would like to hear them in their cars. The broadcast radio industry wins cool factor. Webcasters earn deserved respect and expanded distribution. HD Radio's White Knight could very well be the closest thing to cool that either radio industry has today, being an independent station on the internet. Now some comments from Al Qualieri in New York to DX Listening Digest. I dare say that our technical problems on AM nowadays had already deteriorated due to deregulation and over-allocation and technical neglect and budget slashing and automation and unattended operation and unqualified or non-existent engineers that left the AM band sounding like crap. IBOC is just icing on that awful cake. Not that it much matters. The broadcast band is the domain of conservative alarm monkeys and sports buffoons, none of whom do any service to their communities of service. It isn't even fun to DX anymore with a zillion semi-local pests on every channel, plus the cacophony of power line buzzes and mystery harmonics and wobbly noises generated by every gizmo in our houses. The only place it's still fun to listen is 50 feet inland from an ocean, beside a Hawaiian volcano, or in a shack in the middle of nowhere Newfoundland, with 9 2-mile-long beverages strung through the frozen marshes. On the ABDX list, Dave Griffin, N2CHI, says, I've gotten the harmonic of 1540 in Albany, WDCD, formerly WPTR, on 3080 kilohertz, but at my location I cannot get their fundamental. Their directional to the northeast away from me on the fundamental, but you would think if I can get their harmonic, I could also hear 1540. Evidently the ground wave fundamental is very directional, but the harmonic sky wave propagates better toward me. Chris, K4NHL, replies, in the southern part of Albany, not far from Thruway Exit 23, you can hear KXCL in Iowa on top of WPTR at night. They have one hell of a sharp null. The old joke around Albany, told to me by Rich Place, who worked at WROW, was that WPTR served 6 states, 3 Canadian provinces, and parts of Albany. Al Qualieri explains, the old WPTR's legendary null, which at night gave them a bigger audience in Nova Scotia than in downtown Albany, was not so much a product of their tight tower pattern as it was a deteriorated field of ground mesh. When I was a teenager and they were a top 40 powerhouse, there wasn't any place in town, south of town, or inside a lead vault that you could not hear them with bone-crushing signals. As the years went by, the ground field fell apart, and so did their local signal. According to reports in Current, Maine Public Broadcasting has canceled The Humble Farmer, a folksy Maine Public Radio host, Robert Skoglund, who won fans in New England and beyond for a weekly jazz program interspersed with his wry, country common sense commentaries delivered in a distinct Down East accent. It seems some of his comments were getting rather political, and he was reprimanded and ultimately fired. He has his own website, however, where you can read more about it and hear his programs, www.theumblefarmer.com. More about this from Scott Feibusch, Northeast Radio Watch, June 18th. Maine Public Broadcasting is facing protests over canceling The Humble Farmer. It had been on the air for 28 years. The dispute was with Skoglund over political commentaries. Now a group of lawmakers has signed a non-binding resolution calling on MPBN to restore the show to its airwaves. But it didn't happen, and on July 9th, Scott followed up again. After losing his longtime spot on MPBN, Skoglund is joining low-power WJZP-LP in Standish, which will air The Humble Farmer segments 5 times a week over the air and on its webcast. Dan Say and Mike Cooper, who keep an eye on CBC developments in Canada, forward news from BroadcasterMagazine.com that CBC has launched an Aboriginal website. It's www.cbc.ca/aboriginal. As far as I can tell, it's simply grouping programs which have something to do with First Nations for easy access. But you know, they're using the term Aboriginal rather than First Nations. I wonder if they're not exactly synonymous. This from Bill Lauterbach in Michigan. I know this is a little old, but many are unaware of the closure of a legendary store, Purchase Radio, a Michigan ham store, which served the community in Ann Arbor since 1930, closed in mid-February, according to the Ann Arbor News. The owners decided it was time to retire. Bill says his father and he bought their first antenna supplies from that establishment in 1968. And Bill says he hears that a private company was going around the neighborhood and buying up small properties, tearing them down and laying down asphalt. We later found out that the University of Michigan needed more parking facilities for their football stadium, a stone's throw away from the former Purchase Radio Supply. What a shame. They didn't just sell amateur radio supplies. They carried anything and everything that dealt with all aspects of the radio and electronics hobby. Not only did I buy new and used ham, shortwave, and medium-wave products from 1968 to 2007, but my last purchase in January was a stereo amplifier kit that now drives my Sirius satellite radio for two huge KLH speakers. Glad to hear you're on Sirius. We'll have to tune you in and crank up the audio. Via Bob Wilkner, Shortwave Bulletin, details about Caribbean Weather Center SSV Nets, run by Chris Parker. These operate daily except Sundays. He says, I'll be up on Sundays when tropical or other severe weather threatens, and will announce that in advance. Subject to change as I move around and the bulk of our sponsoring vessels move around. He says, I currently operate as public coast station WCY at Lakeland, Florida. Hail me as Bellamy. In the event of tropical or other severe weather, an evening update will occur on 8137 Upper at 6 p.m. Eastern, unless otherwise announced. Beyond that, I'll give the schedule for all their other frequencies in universal time, at least in effect during summer DST. At 10:30 on 4045, at 11 on 8137, at 1200 on 4045 again, 1230 8104, 1300 12350, 1320 16525, and 1330 6221. I'm wondering why he ordinarily takes Sundays off, since I would think there would be a lot of vessels out there on Sundays, part of a weekend, more than there would be on weekdays. If you think a boat in a bottle is a challenge, how about sculptures inside vacuum tubes? Eric Flodane refers us to this website. It's www.boingboing.net/2007/07/sculptures_inside_va.html. And that's Continent of Media 0703. Glenn Hauser here. This program also known later as World of Radio Extra 77.